KPCW News Time 8:14. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow in Colville, starting at about 2 o'clock. On the phone with me with a rundown of the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council will be looking at an arts and culture initiative. This was proposed a couple of years ago by Randy Barton, as I recall, among others. Are the proponents asking for some direction from the county council here?
I think it's mostly an update at this point. They've been out, the Park City Summit County Arts Council, their steering committee, and those that are working directly on the ABC effort have been out doing interviews with stakeholders. I think it's time that group come back and report to the different bodies that are interested in this study and kind of review where they're at. But I'm sure that they'll be asking the council also for some feedback on their views on arts, beauty, and culture.
Yeah, so when should we expect to see a final report on all this?
Well, in reading through their literature, I think it was supposed to be about a year-long effort. So they started in November of 2016. So probably towards the end of this year is when we would expect that. I'm not exactly clear whether they're on schedule or not, so I imagine we'll hear that from Hadley Dynacht tomorrow night.
Sure. It used to be that it was a 50-50 split with culture and recreation, and somewhere along the line, I think it got cut to a 40% distribution for culture, and we're talking about that 1%, one-tenth of a percent of 1% that goes towards, you know, the RAP funding. Are any talk about bumping that back up to an even split?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if the result of this study is going to influence the council as far as what happens with the distribution of RAP taxes. It certainly could, but I'm not sure that that's the sole focus of the study or even one of the focuses of the study. But I do know in reading through the literature that they are looking at how can they help broaden and solidify what art, beauty, and culture means in Summit County. And, you know, and the county's interest is that means all of Summit County. So I think one of the things that group will be looking at is the funding sources that are currently available.
County Council will also get an update on a solid waste planning effort. Why are you looking for ways to divert more from the landfill when we're about to shut down the current dump and opening up a new cell?
Well, I mean, it's extremely expensive to open and close cells in the landfill. And right now we're opening up a new cell, closing the former cell. There's about five more cells that could be opened up. Just the permitting alone is expensive in order to do that. And then a cell right now costs about $1.5 million in order to open. And that does not include the closure costs. So, you know, the more we can defer from putting in that landfill, the longer those cells last. And that extends the life of that landfill and extends how long it takes before we need to spend more money on solid waste.
Yeah, so with the new space, staff says the landfill has about 35 years. Then what?
Well, I mean, we're hoping that we can extend that time period, first of all. If we could take that out to, say, 40 years, 50 years, then it means that we don't have to look as soon for new landfill space. However, at the same time, knowing that there is a life to that landfill, I'm imagining that over that next 35 to 50 years, we will be looking for places that we could site a new landfill, because what's even more expensive is taking it outside of the county. Plus, it adds to other problems like air quality issues related to transport and things like that.
Yeah, so do you think we just get better at it? Because, I mean, when you think about just adding Silver Creek Village, 1,300 units, when we talk about building out Promontory, when we've got 800 units of new affordable housing in Park City and maybe 600 just there at the Klein Dolly parcel, I mean, we're talking about a lot more people but a lot less trash?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's possible. I mean, certainly the planning that we're doing accounts for a lot of that development. But at the same time, one of the things that the study is showing is that that one of our best opportunities is to affect diversion from a lot of our commercial entities. It shows that a lot of that's already happening, especially in some of what we term as kind of the big box stores, grocery stores, larger square foot properties that are already doing recycling because they find it economically advantageous. I think there's a lot of opportunity in that medium to small commercial business range in order to divert a lot, especially when it comes to cardboard, it looks like.
Yeah, staff report notes about 80% of what goes into the landfill is recyclable, and much of that from the commercial sector. So I think one of the options mentioned is that the council could do an ordinance on commercial recycling then and require what?
It certainly can. I mean, Salt Lake City looks like they have already put something in place to require commercial businesses to recycle. As they implemented that, they gave a grace period for folks to build into that system and build it into their budgets. But that's a possibility. So it is allowable, and it looks like it's allowable in state law to do that. Of course, we'll be reviewing that closer after the recommendations come forward, and if that's something the council wants to pursue.
Right. So in terms of the commercial, I mean, what are the big items here? I mean, you mentioned cardboard. Are we also talking perhaps food waste from the number of restaurants and then glass as a result of those restaurants?
Well, certainly glass is one of the other opportunities that we have. Recycle Utah has had great success in diverting quite a bit of residential glass from the landfill. So we could expand on that. And then just overall recycling. So if food waste composting was part of that, there's a possibility. There's even a possibility of a public-private partnership there with a company that is already doing composting in Summit County. And so we're going to explore that as well.
All right. The report says that about 12% of the solid waste budget is spent on a contract with Recycle Utah, but Recycle Utah diverting less than 2% of waste from the landfill. So are there changes that the council wants to make to that contract?
Well, I think, I'm not sure what those changes would be right now, except that it would certainly be our goal to partner with Recycle Utah to increase those numbers. And so, along with another one of the recommendations, which is to start a material recovery facility, there might be some opportunities there to partner with Recycle Utah, not only to physically up that diversion rate, but where Recycle Utah has been incredibly successful is on the education side. And so if our biggest opportunity is with the commercial side of diversion of trash from our landfill or recyclables, perhaps Recycle Utah can help us with that.
So where are we with a new location? I'm thinking that we were going to know something more this week.
I think we're about as far as we can get with this without getting in front of the council and knowing where they want to go. We have not been out looking for specific property to do this. We have an idea of areas of the county that we'd want to look, but we have not been pursuing specific property.
Okay. Does that mean, though, that Recycle Utah's not getting a new home then, or?
That certainly doesn't mean that. I think there is a strong possibility, especially from the planning and the way I read the document, that there is strong partnership possibility here. And we just don't want to get too far out in front of our council and make sure that we're following their lead before we go out and find homes for people, let's say.
All right. Let's see. Habitat for Humanity asking for a special exception for a one-acre parcel. It's part of the property owned by St. Luke's Episcopal Church near the Blue Roof Market, excluding the church and the parking lot. The request is to put 10 units on this acre. So why is this coming to the council instead of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission?
Well, it's kind of a weird thing. As I read the staff report, it looks like this type of issue has never been brought in front of either the council or the planning commission before. And the, as staff was analyzing it in the attorney's office, they felt like a special exception was the right process to go through according to our code. So that goes in front of the council. I don't think they're asking for the council to actually make a decision this evening, mainly just to give advice to staff on how to process this. It is kind of an unusual request, so it will be interesting. I mean, it certainly follows the council's strategic goals around affordable housing, so I think it's going to be an interesting conversation.
So if, in fact, the council were to say a special exception makes sense for this acreage, then it would come back to the Planning Commission as a development application.
Well, I'm not positive about that, so I don't want to commit to what that process would be, but that seems like the right thing.
Okay. Whereas a spa or a rezone would have gone to the Planning Commission as opposed to a special exception, which comes
absolutely. That's correct.
All right. Also, a discussion on agriculture in the rural residential zone. This was prompted by the Old Ranch Road residents a couple of weeks ago who complained about too many farm animals or too many accessory buildings on some of the lots. I guess the point is that Old Ranch Road is an agricultural area, or isn't it?
Well, I mean, most of the unincorporated part of the county was very agricultural at one time, and our code reflects that. As residential development has happened, of course, it butts up against some of those agricultural activities. Some of the agricultural activities out on Old Ranch Road are newer. Some are more established, or a lot more established. It's an interesting concept. I mean, that these the residential areas are in an unincorporated part of the county, and the code for the Snyderville Basin has always reflected in all of our zones that agriculture is an allowed use. So, as residential was built, it was built with that use already established in the code. So, but at the same time, you know, some of the impacts of agriculture do have an effect on neighbors. It's not a new conflict, neither in Summit County nor across the state.
So what's your thinking? I mean, should we be setting limits on buildings or animals in this area?
Well, I mean, our code certainly doesn't say that right now, and that has been the values of the community in the past. I think we're going to have a lively discussion about that. We certainly have, differing levels of expertise around agricultural, residential, and the interface of those on the council. So I think that's going to be an interesting conversation.
There's also a TZO, a temporary zoning ordinance, for the East County Planning Code to reinstate a procedure to subdivide parcels of 10 acres or more into agricultural production zone into two lots. So it looks like you took away this procedure when you revised the code last June. Now you want to put it back in temporarily?
Well, it was the intent of the Planning Commission when they forwarded the code that the zoning that was proposed in Chapter 3 of the code would remedy this problem. Since Chapter 4 has been adopted, but Chapter 3 has not and is still under deliberation, it leaves a gap of a process for these types of splits. The council felt it was appropriate to put a temporary zoning ordinance in so that the council can finish Chapter 3 and address those issues as the Eastern Planning Commission intended.
All right. Finally, the council about ready to authorize you, the county manager, to approve a consolidation of the dispatch centers of Park City and Summit County, and you would also set up an advisory council for this. Is that where we're headed?
That is correct. So the essentially, there's four actions that have to be taken. We have to enter into a service agreement, and if my council authorizes me to do that, and the Park City Council authorizes the city manager to do that, we will go ahead with that. I believe it's on the agenda for Park City Municipal on Thursday. The second action is that I need to authorize an advisory council for the sheriff, which will be made up of all the entities that are participating in the communication center. We have to amend our chart of positions to accept 5 new FTEs along, and then further, we need to amend the budget for the year to receive the revenue from Park City to support the addition of the FTEs, as well as in order to forward some construction or remodeling funds for the sheriff's office.
So does this new advisory council replace the local community policing board that we have here in Park City?
I don't believe so. I don't think it does. That would be a question more appropriate for the police chief. But this is specifically for the communication center and advising the sheriff on how that operates, as well as especially around equipment issues and compatibility issues between the city and the county and the other entities that are participating in the communication center.
Okay, Tom, anything else you wanted to mention?
That's all I've got this week.
All right, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, you're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time 8:31. Good morning. Well, as we've reported, the Park City School District has hired its first full-time communications director, Melinda Colton. She replaces the former communications specialist. Melinda joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Melinda.
Hello.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you think you're a good fit for the job.
You know, my background really started out in journalism. I'm a former reporter, and I really enjoyed that, but had the opportunity to switch fields into public relations. And I like to think I'm an optimistic person, and so telling the good news was kind of right up my alley. And then I was with Jordan School District for 13 years and absolutely loved that job and realized that public ed is really my thing. Quit that after the district split and stayed home to raise kids. And now my kids are 12 and 13 in middle school, and they don't even really care if I'm around after school. So I thought, it's time to come back to work. And public ed really has been my great love. And so I saw this opening and thought, wow, a district that's a little bit smaller that I can be more intimately involved in. And I'm well aware of the great things that the schools in Park City have done and are doing. So I'm really thrilled to be here.
Yeah. So with a background in crisis messaging and public relations, what do you see your job as?
Well, a lot of it is working with the news media and really keeping you as members of the media informed of what's going on, because you're our voice out to the community. But also, I mean, that's a very small portion of what I'm doing. When I first started my career, there was no such thing as Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. That is a wonderful tool right now to be able to get our message out to the media as well as to our public. I'm amazed as I've started doing that how much people follow us, follow you, follow the Park Record, and want to know what's going on. And so the best thing I bring, I think, to crisis communications is really planning ahead for that event, developing a full-fledged crisis plan. And our theme this year in the district is safe and healthy. And coming up in October, we will have a lunch and learn for parents where the superintendent's going to begin to teach them about safety protocols that we have in the school, the drills the students do, all of those kinds of things. So when that event, small or large, we're prepared for it.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk a little bit about a year ago. I mean, we're about to celebrate the one-year anniversary of those two young boys dying of a
right.
overdose of pink. And not to second guess or, you know, criticize anything that was done a year ago, but in terms of what you know about crisis management, how is that something that would have been publicized?
Well, what I was really impressed with, because even though I was home and I followed this closely, some school districts across the country would say, well, this didn't happen at school. It didn't happen on our school grounds. It happened at home. They would just completely distance themselves from that. And so I do have to give props to the superintendent and this school district for taking the initiative to become involved, to speak out. I mean, these were our students that, and we're a small enough community that people know them and people know their families. And to be able to communicate as clearly as you can, the most important thing you can do in those instances is, once you get that accurate information, to give it to the media. The people at the school the principal, they're victims as much as anyone. They're taking this very hard. They become very emotionally involved. And so I see my role as really kind of helping them through this crisis. Our principals are well trained, and I hope that I can give them even some more messaging tips and things like that. I know they've got great relationships with this radio station, and they will continue to do that. But it really is getting information out that's accurate, that's timely, that's immediate, so that parents feel a sense of calmness as soon as they can, that they have the facts, that they can talk to their children about it. I know it's something that I talked to my children about when I read about it.
Yeah. So is that something that, I mean, that is your role, controlling mm-hmm. the message that's coming from the schools, the principals, the district office?
Not really controlling the message. I think just giving them some ideas. Our principals will still talk for themselves and for their schools. My ideas really are about how we can better improve. How can we get our message out more? Not just through the news media, but whether it's through their newsletters, whether it's through social media, whatever. So I wouldn't say control, because as a former journalist, I don't really believe in controlling the message. The message is what it is. And so, but there's ways to get that out in a quicker response and getting it out more broadly for our parents.
Yeah. But I mean, the difference, though, is between a news entity and a mm-hmm. PR firm mm-hmm. is the way the story is spun. And that's a PR word. So, I mean, as mm-hmm. a PR professional, I mean, is that your role here, is to spin a story? I mean, to make it the good news that you want it to be?
Well, not necessarily. Again, you know, I really still think I'm a journalist at heart. And so I'm not going to tell you something that isn't true, that isn't honest. If something bad happens, that's what it is. My job, though, is to help principals better communicate that in a way I think that's more accurate, that's more concise, that's quicker. And then my job, really, probably 80% of that, are sharing those human interest stories, sharing that good news of the great things that this district is doing, because this district really is on a national stage when it comes to a lot of our programs.
Yeah. What do you see your top priority as in the next few months? Of course, you're aware that mm-hmm. we had a failed bond.
Yes.
And that's something I know that we have postponed for at least another year. So, mm-hmm. I mean, is that a big part of what you're going to be doing here in the next
What I think that the board really is starting to undertake is a strategic plan. Now, the district already has had one. We're updating that. And so this strategic plan, and I love strategic planning, because what it does is it drives the district forward. And so as the school board decides to make decisions related to financing, whether it's a bond, whether it's building new schools, this strategic plan sets their priorities. So do they believe in smaller schools, and that means we need to build, or do we believe in quality education no matter the size of the school? This strategic plan, and again, I'll be involved with that, because we really have to have our stakeholders, our public, our parents, our business leaders involved to help us say, what are the priorities of this district as we come into 2017, 2018? They're different than they were 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and we had heard about a school board listening tour to mm-hmm. find out, you know, what taxpayers want to see in a future school bond, but haven't seen anything since then. So are they kind of waiting for you to help move this along?
I think so, and I'm only a week on the job, a week and a day, and so I'm still sifting through emails, and I am learning an awful lot, but I love that they did that. I see us doing more of that as well. Really having parents involved. I know parents are involved in Park City, but to a degree here that I haven't quite seen anywhere else, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. In terms of the school bonding, I mean, mm-hmm. This is something I think you have been involved in with Jordan School District, and
yes.
then I think they saw a couple of bonds go down to defeat as well.
They did. I wasn't there, thank goodness. The one bond that I helped with was around $285 million. At that time, it was the largest bond in history, and so bonding's a really delicate tool. My own school district is looking to bond right now, and as a taxpayer, I'm trying to decide, do we really need to rebuild schools? And so bonding is a very complex issue. It really is about buy-in from those who pay our taxes and whether or not they believe in the same philosophy that the school board does. And so that's something I think that we can help bridge, and getting that information out, really saturating the public with everything we can about why we need more money for our schools.
So stay tuned, right?
Exactly.
How does your job as communications director differ from what we had as a communications specialist?
the communication specialist really did this more on a part-time basis, and she also, I believe, also did a lot of community affairs. As the district is growing, and it's growing, thus the need for a bond, the needs are greater now with social media, with the failed bond, the fact that we need more communications and you need it more on a full-time basis.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the school district's theme for this school year is being focused on safe and healthy. Tell us some of the things that you expect that we should see about that. I mean, that's something you're, I guess, asking the individual schools to help you direct? Or?
We are. We're asking them throughout the year, anytime they promote a safe and healthy issue, for example, Treasure Mountain Junior High at their open house this week, in addition to the open house where parents can come and meet teachers, they're also going to have an expo where partners throughout the community are going to come in and talk and have booths set up related to healthy lifestyle, safety procedures, those kinds of things. And I thought that was a wonderful way to kind of combine and marry those two things. Again, things like lunch and learn where the superintendent explains safety protocols for the school. In November, we're going to have with police and our other community partners, a tabletop kind of crisis situation. I believe in those. I think those kinds of drills are really important. And so stay tuned to that, because throughout the year, that really is going to be our hashtag on almost everything we do. And that really came out of this incident that happened last year with these two young students.
Yeah, and of course, we were speaking with the new coordinator of the communities that Karen, I'm guessing you're going to be working hand in hand with her as well.
We also have our new assistant superintendent who is over student wellness, and Dr. Belknap is going to bring some really great things. I know that over the summer, our counseling departments have a brand new curriculum that they're trying to implement to talk about drugs and safety and suicide and all those issues that parents really just need some help with and know how to talk to their kids about it.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us?
Leslie, it's great to be here. I'm still commuting from Draper, which is a long drive, but I have a son in Chinese immersion. Until he can test out in ninth grade, I'll be making that drive. Unless we decide we're going to start offering Mandarin here in Park City Schools. And so, of course, I'm all for that. So,
I think we did at one point.
I think you did. I know they have it at the high school, but until he finishes that, we're still commuting. But it's a beautiful drive here, and I'm so happy to be here.
Okay. What's the best way for people to communicate with you?
They can email me, and that general email is just communications@pcschools.us. They can also call the district and just ask for Melinda. I think I'm the only Melinda in the building, so I'm easy enough to get a hold of.
And again, and you've got social media accounts, Facebook,
Twitter. Those are the two that we're really focusing on right now. So Park City Schools is our handle on Twitter. So follow us. I try to post numerous times throughout the day.
Okay. Melinda, congratulations. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's Melinda Colton, again, the new communications director for Park City School District. The Friends of the Park City Library used book sale will be held this Labor Day weekend. In the studio with details, I have the co-presidents of that organization, Jean Daly and Marlene Peacock. Good morning, ladies.
Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us. Good morning.
Yeah, so the sale, 3 days only. Members still get an opportunity for the early bird preview. So why don't we start with that, because that's where things open up.
Okay, well, the preview is Saturday morning starting at 9 o'clock, and it goes until 10:30. It's for the members of the Friends of the Library, and right now we probably have, about 180 friends, and we serve a little brunch, and they get an opportunity to go in and have first choice of all the books.
Okay. Marlene, memberships can be purchased at the door then?
Yes, absolutely. If you'd like to join, come, and then you'll get the preview benefit right then and there.
Okay. Was that one of the best benefits of being a member, or just a support, knowing that you're supporting your public library?
Well, both. It's certainly a benefit from being a member, because you do get first pick of all the books. So that's a big benefit, actually.
And, you know, this is our major fundraiser, actually our only fundraiser of the year. And so we have, Leslie, $1 million books. We have loads and loads of books.
And I know I dropped a bunch off.
Thank you.
So all of the books are going to be on the third floor then? We've got in the auditorium as well as the new community room?
Yes, right. As we had it set up last year, which is a great setup for us. It's just so much better than what it was before, and far less work for the board and volunteers to help set it up. So, yes, we'll be in the Santee, and then the community room. And then we have a few auxiliary rooms for young adults and children.
And, okay, you know, we've gotten smarter as we get used to using that third floor. Now all of our categories are alphabetized on the tables. So if people are looking at animals, they know to go to the first table. And if they want fiction, it's all in the Jim Santee. So we're very organized. So
we're far more efficient.
All right. Well, so after the member, then it opens to the public who are not members at 10:30 on Saturday. And give us the rest of the hours and that you've got.
So Saturday, open to the public at 10:30 to 3. Sunday, of course, open to the public 10:30 to 3. And then Monday, which is our big day, that's our bag day, that's 10:30 to 2. We close an hour early because we do have to clean up and get everything out of the Santee. So big day on Monday, come after the parade, bag day.
How does that work, bag day?
So this year we're doing our Friends of the Library bags for $10. So no other bags will be allowed. So come and buy a bag, which of course helps us with money. And then you can fill that bag. And it's just $10 for all the bags you can put in, all the books you can put in the bag.
Okay.
And you could probably fit paperbacks, I bet, 25 paperbacks in a book. It's
a good size bag.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell us about some of the things that Friends donations have paid for this past year at the library.
Well, you know, with the now have the motto in at our board meetings that we're not just about books anymore. And so we do things like we sponsored the music on Wednesdays mornings at the library, which was very successful. We also, I don't know whether our listeners have seen that there's a table with all what we call toys. There are croquet sets and bocce balls and chuckers for dogs, and people can check those out just like they would a book. And they were very, very popular. So we're really branching out in the things that the library is, you know, has become such a community center that we've really branched out in all the things that we have our fingers on now.
Yep. So what's on the wish list for this year? Any idea what the staff would like?
Well, I think they're thinking about it because they will get their fiscal year ends, and then they're thinking about what they're going to need. We also do a lot of conferences for the staff where the city budget doesn't cover that. They are now doing a lot more of those, so I think we'll see that on the budget. So I think we're telling them to reach higher. Let us have some opportunities to fund new things and new opportunities.
So you always have leftover books. How are you guys getting rid of those now?
We have, luckily, a bookseller who comes at the end of the book sale. So he'll be there on Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And he comes and he takes every single book that is left. He brings some to hospitals, some to veteran centers, and then he recycles the rest. So we start off right after the book sale with our room being completely empty. And, of course, then we start getting donations right after that for next year's book sale.
Okay. And you also have the upcoming Friends Author Luncheon. Can
yes,
you tell us when and where that is?
Mm-hmm. That is going to be on October 10th, which is a Tuesday. It will be at Silver Lake Lodge at Deer Valley. Doors will open at 11 a.m. And tickets will go on sale soon. We wanted to get the book sale behind us, and then we'll get the tickets going. They'll be $36 per person, and then $40 after October 6th.
We're very excited about our author. Our author is a local, Jane Perkins. She and her husband, David, founded High West Distillery. And she has written a book called The Golden Alexa of the West. And it's the history of whiskey and how whiskey has helped develop the West. So it should be very, very interesting. It's going to be, as Marlene said, at Silver Lake Lodge. So it should be a great event.
Yeah. Is she going to have a book? Because I know they're like being...
They're being produced, right?
Yes, yeah. But yeah, she will have them. And Deer Valley is going to make a signature cocktail based on whiskey for the event.
And Dolly's is going to be there selling the books.
Okay. Again, the Friends of the Park City Library used book sale kicks off on Saturday morning for members only, 9 to 10:30, then opening up to the public Saturday morning at 10:30, running Sunday, and again with the bargain bag sale on Monday. Ladies, thanks.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:50. 8:50. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City Newcomers Annual Membership Luncheon coming September 13th in the studio with us. I've got the co-presidents of the Newcomers Club, Karen Caldwell and Sue Banos. Good morning to both of you, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning. We're glad to be here.
Yeah, so the luncheon is Wednesday, September 13th, 11 to 2 at the Silver Lake Lodge in Upper Deer Valley. Who's invited?
Everybody. This is our annual gathering where everyone in town is invited to come and see what we have to offer, our activities, our monthly coffees where we have other nonprofits that talk to us about volunteer opportunities and things that go on here in Park City. All of our activity chairs will be there with descriptions of their activities and when they happen and what you might be interested in. So all of our members, any of their friends, neighbors, new neighbors, everybody in town, just all you have to do is go to the website, which is parkcitynewcomers.org. And when you get there, there's tabs, and you click on one that says newsletter and just select the current month's newsletter. The whole front page gives you lots of information and detail and how to register for the luncheon.
Okay. And, Sue, this is newcomers. I mean, even though it's newcomers, I mean, you've got people who have been there for years,
right? We have people. I think Newcomers was founded in 1998, and there's members who have been there. Is that right, in 98? There's people who have been members since day one. And we, at our coffees, we always introduce new people and people that are interested. And very often someone will stand up and say, I've lived in Park City for 14 years, but this is the first time I'm free to be able to do things. So we have people that are new to Park City, been in Park City, just anyone who likes activities. We love to have them.
So it's really a social club more than anything, just
very
under the newcomers
so.
Banner.
Very much so.
Yeah, so.
And another thing about the luncheon, though, someone dear to this radio station is going to be our speaker, and that's Mr. Randy Barton.
Yeah, so what have you asked him to come talk about? We know Randy can talk, so you guys, you may go over, but.
I think we gave him an open-ended platform, so we hope to laugh a lot.
Well, he was, the basic idea was that he's going to share the history of art and theater. He calls it the ABCs.
Yeah, art, beauty, and culture.
That's it, the ABCs of Park City with us. And I'm sure it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So the cost of the luncheon is how much?
It's $40 if you get your ticket before September the 6th. Then after that, it goes up to $50. And we will allow people to pay that day, but we would prefer people to have tickets ahead of time.
All right. And they'll have a choice of entrees. I saw it look pretty good. Kind of a shrimp.
It does look good, doesn't it? I thought the grilled shrimp scampi skewers is my favorite, of course. But we also have a roasted acorn squash filled with mushrooms and quinoa. So we have the vegetarian option. Both of them can be requested as gluten-free or dairy-free. So you don't even have to worry about any of your dietary restrictions. You can come and enjoy it, including dessert. They're doing a fabulous job for us up at Deer Valley.
And dessert is brown butter plum tart. And maybe I'll just have three of those and no meal.
So to talk to me, we got a few minutes here, about just the number of activity groups and events that Newcomers does.
Well, I'll start and Sue can fill in. We have activities. We have men, women, combo activities, anybody and everybody. Bowling, bridge, canasta, golf, garden club, yoga, a gourmet yoga. That we're having a special gourmet yoga event this month, but we have fine dining, we have supper club, we have wine tasting, we have a brand new writer circle, a lady starting that for people who enjoy writing and would like to share that with people. We also have a travel group that started recently, Wanderlust Travel, where you just get together and talk about your trips, whatever great places you've been, share your photos with other people that love doing that. So that's been a lot of fun. We have bridge, of course, two kinds of bridge, Stitch and Chat.
And for Stitch and Chat, if you don't stitch, we just welcome you to chat. So everything. And golf, we have a golf group, and they just play fun golf. You can change the lie of your ball. You can keep score if you want. You can play best ball. It's just really a fun way to play.
9 holes and usually dinner afterwards. A lot of newcomers' activities include dinner. or lunch.
And wine.
And wine.
You guys sound like a fun
group.
We
have fun.
Again, the website, if people want more information.
The website is parkcitynewcomers, all one word, .org. And when you go on there, you can look at our past newsletters, which include all the activities and all the details. You can see what we've been up to. We also have a shooting club. I can't believe I forgot that one, that a gentleman named Ken Miller runs. But you can look at all the past activities, the registration and what it costs and how to become a member is there. Our monthly coffees are promoted there where everybody gets together for about 45 minutes and chats and has snacks. And then we usually have a speaker that comes in from a nonprofit of some sort. All that info is there. It's parkcitynewcomers.org.
Yeah, so it's an annual membership fee then to be part of the club?
Yes, it is. It runs from October 1st to September 30th.
And it's $35 for the entire year, and that's for a membership for a couple is $35, or a single person, just depends on your household. So
all right,
it's a great deal.
Some of the events then an additional charge.
Not many. No.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. Again, if people are interested in joining you, the annual membership luncheon is going to be held Wednesday, September 13th. Randy Barton here of KPCW, and of course, the Egyptian Theater will be the featured speaker. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.